We're Eternals. We came here 7,000 years ago to protect humans from the Deviants.
Why didn't you guys help fight Thanos? Or any war, or all the other terrible things throughout history?
We were instructed not to interfere in any human conflicts unless Deviants are involved.
By who?
Hello and welcome to this Fan Critical podcast, which is a spoiler cast on Marvel's Eternals. Ooh, yes, the 1,000,000th film in the Marvel franchise. Today, I'm joined by Gaz. Now, you know, first question off the bat. So all the Eternals, yeah, they all have specific powers, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know where this is going.
Weirdly, they all have specific powers. What one would you choose out of all of those powers?
That's a good question. And there are some great powers. You know,
I would choose super speed.
Well,
that's
I
me
will
doing
choose
you.
Super speed. That's absolutely right. And I understand, you know, that there are more practical powers. I get that. And, you know, being able to control minds, arguably, has more use. But it's just fucking cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Running fast. I mean, you know, in a way, I already have that superpower, so don't need it. I'll take the next one. Next. Thanks. What about you? What are you taking? I'll take super strength.
Yeah, I'm the Icarus of the group, obviously.
Nonsense.
Of the whole Fan Critical unit. I would say, you know, I'm the alpha. The apex
if we
predator.
If we're getting into spoilers straight away, it means you're also the dickhead, the bell end of the group. So yes, I suppose that is accurate. Well done.
Probably very true. to be honest with you, sometimes I'm harsh but fair. I would say John would be the sort of Gilgamesh type character. Although when I think about this, I think
Gilgamesh is very sweet.
Yes, yeah, sweet, and John is caring, obviously, but he's
not
sweet.
Not outwardly.
Is definitely not how I would describe.
He's not explicitly sweet, is he?
No.
Like he keeps it bottled up. We know he cares, but he doesn't show it, unlike Gilgamesh.
So who would John be? He'd be sort of... he can't be Kingo.
I don't know
who John is.
Definitely not. Who's the really shit one?
He's not
one?
Fastos.
Who's the really shit one that does nothing?
He's not Fastos.
Oh, we're running out of options here. He'll have to be Thena.
Yeah, John can be... No, I've got it. John can be the deviant. That is becoming like sort of self-aware and
he
grumpy,
is, isn't he? He is becoming self-aware out. And sentient in real life.
He is. So John can be that. I think Lucy would be Thena. Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's a fair shout. And Emma could be
she might be
the
Cersei
little kid that doesn't grow up and gets annoyed at everything.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no. I thought she'd be Sprite, but that's just me.
She'll be Sprite. She's upset that she can't have things that real adults can have.
So before we get into our thoughts on Marvel's Eternals, I thought I'd paint a little picture for everybody, because Melbourne, where me and Gareth reside, is the most locked down city, and this is a fact, in the world. So we have spent the most time of anywhere globally in lockdown. Now, Melbourne, before coronavirus began, was voted and has been voted for several years as the most livable city in the world in terms of, like, you know, happiness, you know, real estate, all this shit, Gareth, right? All these metrics that people measure about livable cities.
See, you're an expert. Yeah.
Yeah. Big expert. Melbourne is number one. Okay. Or was number one. Now it's been locked down all this time.
It just to sort of add a bit to that, it's, I won't go too deep into it, but it's by the Economics Intelligence Unit, and Melbourne was 7 years in a row.
Oh,
it was
God.
Number one. 7 years in a row. Quite the reign of terror that Melbourne had.
So me and Gareth have been locked down, unable to go to the cinema for a very long time, which is why a lot of the Fan Critical content has been original content. You know, the whole cinema industry was hit, so that's why we came up with things like Not All Sequels, How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That, 60 Minutes to Midnight, Something Old, Something New, etc., etc. Because we just couldn't go and see films. And technically, until a few weeks ago, we still couldn't go and see films. Literally, this is 2 weeks ago, we can finally go to the cinema. So obviously, we're very excited. We're like, okay, we finally get to go to the cinema. Now,
let's go see June.
Spoil it, but Gaz wasn't. Yeah, we want to see June, but we still can't see that yet. But Gaz wanted to, didn't really want to see this film. Anyway, I'm quite excited to see this film. So yes. I try and get to the cinema nice and early, you know, get myself a nice little meal beforehand, settle in for a nice thing. Turns out that I had the most stressful approach to a film I've ever had in my life.
I've never seen anything like it.
I was stuck in parking hell. It's in a shopping center, right? The cinema, a mall to you Americans. And honestly, I cannot tell you how annoyed I was. I was punching the steering wheel. I was swearing. I was beeping. I was going crazy. I could not get a parking space for 40 minutes. I thought I was going to miss the movie. All right. So Gaz knows because I rang him and I was just like, I'm going to fucking miss the movie. This is a fucking joke. Your country's a joke.
It was incredible. The most xenophobic vitriol coming, spewing from his little mouth. It made no sense as well.
I was so annoyed.
This fucking country. This doesn't happen in England. Yeah, mate, you didn't drive in England, you lunatic. What are you talking about?
I did.
I wasn't going to say that to you at the time, though.
I finally got a space just as the film was beginning, right? So rush in, get all my snacks. As we know on this podcast, I like my snacks. I get my M&Ms, I put it in my popcorn, and I get my large, you know, Pepsi Max, Coke Zero, whatever. That's my thing. Get all my snacks and we settle in. So my mind space going into this film was already at rock bottom. Okay? Rock fucking bottom.
You'd been questioned now, as well by the cinema lady. God.
Are you vaccinated? She didn't believe I was double vaccinated. I'm double vaccinated, all right? Let me in the fucking cinema. Here's my certificate.
You look unwell.
Anyway, well, that's fair. That's fair, you know. I did look very disheveled that day. Yesterday. So before we get into spoilers, because spoilers abound, okay, spoilers abound, and we're going to talk full spoiler cast. What I thought we'd do is talk spoiler-free about our general thoughts on the film, give it a score, and then we'll go into spoilers, so that if anyone has the urge to still go see this film or hasn't seen this film yet and just wants our overall thoughts without anything being given away, then I thought this is a better way to do it. So this is what Rotten Tomatoes has to say. Which is kind of a barometer we use to see general consensus. Now, I don't believe in the tomatometer or whatever it's called.
Tomatometer.
You know, if it's 60%, if someone gives it like 3 stars, it's, you know, it's certified fresh. Okay. And it could be across the board that happens. So it's a difficult one. But we do use it because it's a good gauge of sort of where a consensus is at. It definitely isn't a marking scale for a film.
You were, and I know this for a fact, you were pro tomato meter until...
Oh, hey, IMDb and tomatoes.
You were pro Rotten Tomatoes until it proved you wrong about Princess Bride, and now you've suddenly switched.
God. No, I've always said this. You can go back. Anyway, Rotten Tomatoes says this. An ambitious superhero epic that soars as often as it strains. Eternals takes the MCU in intriguing and occasionally confounding new directions. 47% critic response, 80% audience response. So that's quite interesting to me that there's this, the audience seem to like it, but critics are waning on the MCU bandwagon a little bit. So Gareth, I want your thoughts and your blueberry score. Of course, the blueberry scale 0 to 5 can be no halves, you know, very harsh but fair scale. First question is, can I have your overall thoughts? And then after you've blueberried it, I want you to tell me where you think this sits within the MCU sort of portfolio, because obviously they've had almost 30 films now, maybe more, it might be 31, plus all the TV stuff that's going on. Where do you think this sits in the pantheon of Marvel?
Good use of pantheon. That feels relevant.
Yeah, very much so.
All right. So in your setting of the scene, you did mention that I wasn't looking forward to this film. And that's a vast understatement. I could not be arsed with this at all. As I've said a few times, I'm totally marveled out. I've had enough. I don't need it. every time I see that Marvel opening credit thing, I'm just tired of it. I'm so tired of it. And that's a shame. I don't want to feel like that. It's given me some incredible movies, some brilliant times. But stop it. Stop it, please, for a bit. Just for a bit. Stop it. And it feels like...
Yes, Disney, stop making billions of dollars. Stop making... Hey, Disney, you know that printing, money printing machine you've got over there? Turn that off for a bit.
Yes, well, all right? You know... should we, if you have that attitude to everything, Len, we'd still have coal factories opening up across the world. Oh, wait, we still do.
Yeah, we do. And I have to say, me and Disney, very different people. So,
okay.
One's got big ears. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I've got big ears as well.
And the other's Disney. Yeah. So, look, expectations weren't high going in. I'm going to say... In some ways, I was slightly pleasantly surprised in how I felt about this film. I don't know whether that's just because of the experience of going to the cinema with you for the first time in a long time. It's been a while. The shenanigans that took place beforehand with you and your parking and not being allowed in for a bit, and I had to come and let you in like I was your dad or something. But I enjoyed the experience. And the film itself had some things that I did like. You know, I am a geographer by trade. I'm a geography teacher. It's not quite as exciting as it sounds. And I love the element of, like, travelling around the world that this has. You know, we're all over the place. We're in London. We're in the Amazon. Not specified where, but we're in the Amazon, we're in Australia, we're in India. It was cool. I really liked that. We also traveled through time on a few occasions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes slightly bamboozlingly as well, like there was one in particular, one travel back in time, and I thought that was part of the linear storyline at first, that, you know, they went, we have to go and see Ajak. And then they were back sort of 1,000 years prior. And I was like, oh, cool. They've traveled in time. So some of that was a bit confusing, but I did like that element. I also didn't necessarily mind the fact that it's 2 hours and 37 minutes long, which on paper sounds like it's going to be far too long. I'm not sure.
The longest Marvel movie ever, by the way.
Is it really? Wow. I'm not sure it sort of gave that impression. So look, there are a couple of things that I didn't mind. So some of the acting was good. There's a cool cast in this, and some interesting characters. It's very diverse. You have to give it some credit for that. Incredibly diverse cast.
Yep. Very much so.
But then there are some things that really let it down, unsurprisingly, I think. Like the incredibly convenient explanations that are given that don't really make much sense for why they haven't been getting involved in anything that's happened.
Yeah. And we'll also get on to some of the huge plot holes, I think, in terms of their reasoning for things is baffling.
Okay.
To
me. I won't say anything about that, but yes, some of the baffling decision making is absurd. And you know, There are several story threads that just go nowhere, and I don't understand why. So I feel like this is a... Do you know what? I think I'm going to surprise you here. I'm going to give it 3 blueberries.
Oh, 3.
Yeah. I was torn. I was going to call it an enjoyable 2, but I don't think that's allowed. I think it's a 3. I'm not in a rush to go and see it again, but did I hate watching it yesterday? Not really, no.
And do you think it's the worst Marvel film, or do you think it's above some of the others?
Without being able to sort of think of specifics off the top of my head, I think that it's slightly less formulaic than some of the, like, you know, some of the like the old Captain America ones. Like, some of them are just like that. I've got no interest.
Hey,
again.
Wait a minute.
I'm not saying it's worse.
You're picking the wrong ones.
I'm not saying that it's worse than any of them. I'm saying that it's less formulaic. It gives us something slightly different.
Correct.
Which
it does give us something slightly different. Yeah.
Which means it has slightly more value, I think, than some of the others.
Okay.
It's in the bottom sort of three, at least.
I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't. Well, yeah, maybe. Okay. Well, spoiler for my thoughts. That I think there's a lot going on in this film. There's a lot going on, and I think its biggest problem is, whereas you have 20-ish movies, or, like, you know, at the time it was 9-10 movies before you get to the Avengers or whatnot, and you've built up all these characters, there's 10 Eternals here, and there's no way that we can, even in 2 hours and 30 minutes, there's no way we can get to know them all in a satisfying way. And really care about them, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge problem. So I think the first and foremost, the major problem is caring about the characters. And for me, because Eternals are essentially the idea that they've lived for, you know, thousands of years or whatever.
Eternity.
Yes. And it's about them changing over time. And although they do a good job of illustrating that throughout the film, because they show us these settings and key points in human history, potentially, the film is quite devoid of character and it's quite devoid of life, I found it to be, even the cinematography, I thought was pretty bad. I thought it was lifeless at times.
Do you think? I'm not sure I agree with that.
I feel it was dark and dreary. Like, there was some scenes in the, like, and I'm not spoiling it, but there's scenes in, like, jungles and stuff where it's supposed to be vibrant, effervescent, and it was really dark and it was really dingy. And I was like, oh, God. And it made me think about...
Jungles are dark.
Look, this isn't to say... well, yeah, they can be. But this was, like, supposed to be during the day. It was a really weird lighting setup. But anyway, I digress. The end of the day, I actually did enjoy the film. I thought it was slightly worse than I was expecting, because I actually went in with quite decent expectations. Yeah, because I feel that this could have gone in a really interesting way, and did at times. But there's a couple of things that it made me think, and this is just the way when I was watching it, it made me think of DC. So a couple of times in quite a funny way, and we'll get into that later, but it made me think of DC films, because it felt like a DC film. It felt there wasn't that Marvel humor, that not good humor that was very quippy.
That's a good point. A good point. I'm glad you bring that up. The humor is like
just didn't land
so
at all.
Forced,
whatever, and they were very forced. It felt like, when, you know, DC in that regard, because they try and force their humor into a dark film with dark themes, and sometimes it just doesn't land. The overpowered nature of the Eternals makes them extremely problematic. And it comes down to this fact that, why do we like characters like Iron Man and Batman? Because they are just human beings who, at the end of the day, can affect, you know, the outcome of the universe, you know, and
aren't we all?
That's fascinating. That's fascinating to me. Whereas when you have these overpowered characters teeing off on each other, it comes across as a bit silly. Not to say that obviously characters like Thor and, you know, Thanos, when he has the Infinity Gauntlet and stuff, aren't overpowered. Of course they are, but they are the ultimate in that, you know, in the MCU. Or are they now? And after the Infinity War, Marvel could only go in one direction. They could only go bigger. I mean, how do you go bigger than the extinction of half of the universe? you know, let's go to Celestials and the creation of universes themselves. And that's interesting, I guess. And I am interested to see where that goes. I think the MCU is doing much more interesting things with Loki and his storyline. So that's where I think they should be heading. But for me, good themes here, some decent performances. Didn't love the CGI. Didn't love the film. I have no urge to ever see this film again. Whereas with some Marvel films, like, I know you slagged off Captain America, but if The Winter Soldier's on, I watch it every single time without fail. It's probably my favorite, probably my second favorite Marvel film ever is The Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Now I'm in no rush to see this again. Like, this for me is probably in the bottom five of the Marvel films. I think it's nowhere near as bad as Thor Dark World. I think it's better than Iron Man 3. I think,
yeah,
you know,
those
it's
are good examples. Thank
possibly
you.
Possibly Ant-Man, you know, stuff like that, which I don't really love. You know, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I had no real love for. So for me, yeah, it's a three blueberry still. And I think as a barometer, to say that Marvel still in their like 30th outing to have a three blueberry film be one of their worst films is an incredible achievement, to be honest with you. It's mad how this is still way better than a lot of shit that DC did before DC had their sort of revival, which they're going through at the moment. Don't take it for me saying that it's still an okay film.
This is better than like Justice League.
Yeah. I mean, I like the Schneider Cut, but other than the Schneider Cut, yes, the original Justice League, this is way better than that. Way, way better than that. So that's my sort of barometer, and I hope that gives you guys our thoughts on it as a general sort of a point of reference. Do I think you need to see this film? I would say if you are a Marvel fan and you care about the sort of direction that Marvel is going in and the lore and the history, I would say you definitely need to go see this film just to have a better understanding of where they're going, potentially. But if you are just a casual Marvel fan and you're like, oh, should I go see Eternals? Don't worry about it. Honestly, I would say don't worry about it. I'd say just have a little break from Marvel for a bit. You know, we've got some absolute bangers coming up soon, hopefully, with Spider-Man No Way Home and Thor Love and Thunder. And I think both of those films are going to be fantastic. I think they're going to be amazing films, honestly. So just wait for them, to be honest with you. But if you're a hardcore fan, check out Eternals for sure, because I think the direction of the MCU is clearly going in a very, very huge direction in terms of scale.
Here's a little thought, right? Little question. You are saying, you know, after all the events of Thanos, where can they go? Like, how can they possibly get bigger? Well, did they have to? Do they have to get bigger? Or no. Can you now, like, maybe come back and maybe turn it into, have a look at like way more localized stories, like other things that can happen on a really small, personal, or like, you know, just a local scale. Yeah. Like that could happen. That could be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into it later about an argument of should Marvel have put a full stop on everything and just stopped after Endgame, because that would have been a fantastic exclamation point to everything they've done. And then done a Star Wars and brought it back in, say, 10, 15, 20 years'
correct.
Time.
That's the correct
Very
option.
Interesting. But yeah, we could talk about it later. Before we jump into spoilers, just a quick thing to say. Thank you to everyone for your incredible support over the last few months while we've been coming out of COVID. Our original content has gone down very well, so I'm glad that everyone is liking that. We will be doing more reviews like this. We did a June review last week with John and Emma. We've done our Eternals review now. There's obviously more and more Marvel films coming out and other things that we want to focus on and review, as well as some TV shows next year. So thank you for all your support. If you do want to support us further and help us financially, you can go to patreon.com/fancritical. All of that money that we've received is going towards things like hosting costs, equipment, coming up with new ideas, you know, enabling us to create new shows, which is, you know, this is, as I've said many times, this isn't our day job. We have a other things as well on top of this. So any sort of financial help is massively influential to the growth of this podcast. And we want to thank all of our Patreons for their continued support. And anything to add on that, Gareth?
Well, we've got babies now that, you know, we need to keep them in nappies.
We do.
So if you can pay for
nappies. I will say now, no Patreon money goes towards nappies.
No. Yeah, that is disclaimer.
It, okay,
yeah.
That disclaimer. That's false
some
information.
Only
yeah,
a small news. Amount goes on nappies.
Fake news, not false news. Fake news. So yes, thank you to all our Patreons. That's patreon.com/fancritical. And please do spread the word of Fan Critical. Subscribe, share. If you think any of your friends are like-minded and might enjoy the podcast, do pass it on.
Oh, I've got a little request as well.
Get passed on.
If we have any creative listeners, which I'm sure we do, I'm sure we've got some very creative, listeners.
Our listeners are very creative. Don't ever say they're not.
Send us some original content. You know, send us some artwork or some
oh, Jesus.
Like, send us things that
not asking for much. Send us a Picasso.
Well,
send us a fucking
I'm presuming that the Picasso is not listening. I'm saying original stuff, you know? Yeah, don't copy. Don't copy.
Yes, that's a bizarre request. But any art, you know, it could be from when you're in kindergarten or
I want to hear from listeners. That's what I want.
Oh, he just wants to hear from you. You don't need to send an art. Just send us some thoughts. Twitter.
Poetry.
You can get us at fan_critical. You can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. Anyway. Enough of this nonsense. Let's talk spoilers for Marvel's Eternals. Now, there's a couple of things that I want to get into. I think, first of all, let's set up the general... We're not going through the plot. We're talking about just points during the film. Let's set up the general sort of mythology that goes on in this film. Okay, so Eternals are created by Celestials. All right? Celestials create universes, and to do so, they have to be born. Celestials are born like anything else. And to do that, Arishem, the sort of seems to be the leader of the Celestials, plants little seeds within planets' cores. He then creates the Eternals, who are these super-powered, supercharged beings that have to go to these planets to enable life, as in sentient life, to flourish, because the seed within the planet sucks in all of that life, as in it just feeds off of life being on planet, sentient life. And then when the time is right, the emergence happens and the planet is destroyed, killing all sentient life on that planet, and a celestial is born, which then... leads to the creation of galaxies, which then leads to the creation of more planets, which then can be seeded, etc., etc. That is the sort of general Marvel mythology that they've gone with. Now, this is interesting to me because it's big, it's huge. Celestials are quite cool in their design. I love the idea of Celestials and Celestials, we've actually come across them before in Guardians of the Galaxy, because the city or the sort of refuge of loads of criminals is called Nowhere, right? And that actually resides within the sort of remains of a Celestial, which is a really cool setting. Do you remember
I
that,
do.
Gareth? Nowhere?
I do. That's,
really cool,
yeah, that's
really
a good
cool
one.
Place. Yeah. Yeah. So we have this idea of Celestials. We also know that Celestials, you know, can wield Infinity Stones. We've seen this in flashbacks, blah, 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 blah. So we've known about the Celestials for a while, but we get to see them here. Mainly we get to see Arishem, who is the, as I said, the King Celestial. And he converses with Ajak and then Cersei, who becomes the leader of the Eternals. Right, Gareth. That's a general sort of big scope of what's going on here. And then obviously the Eternals, the idea of them is that they've actually been doing this for millions of years. They've been going to other planets, getting to the emergence over thousands of years, destroying civilizations, worlds. Then they get their memories wiped and they do it all again, living this kind of terrible cycle. It's quite just horrible to think about, of ending billions of lives constantly throughout their lifetime.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the purpose of the Eternals is that they need to protect like humanity or whatever sentient life is existing on the planet that they're on a mission to. They need to protect them from the deviants so that they can there can be enough of them for the what's the big one called again?
Tiamat or something.
Yeah, the big boy Tiamat, the celestial.
Yeah, Tiamat's in
So that they can feed enough off the intelligence of sentient beings. Because the deviants would kill
too
many humans. But the deviants were also sent
by the celestials.
Why did that happen?
So people who have seen the film will understand this. Right, so Celestials, before they created Eternals, sent deviants to kill like dinosaurs or apex predators that would stop intelligent life. However, the deviants became sort of more aware, they evolved, and then they started hunting the humans, which is why the Eternals were needed to go and kill the deviants to allow life to flourish.
Yes.
Now, there's a couple of massive flaws in this, right? Number one, the Eternals are told to not get involved in any human conflict. So when humans, like you see it throughout the film in the flashbacks where the Eternals are just watching war between the humans take place, they're like, no, we're not allowed to get involved unless deviants are involved, right? Because for some reason, the Celestials think that if humans have war, they'll breed more so they can make armies and stuff like that, so they will be more humans in the future. Now, surely that's a load of bollocks. And just think about things like the Holocaust, 6 million people killed. Think about things like Hiroshima, which is in this film, you know, hundreds of thousands of people killed.
There is an argument academia that says, you know, the greatest advancements
in
civilization
come because of war.
So I guess they're going down that route. But yeah, there are events that do their purpose, that serve their mission no purpose, that they could stop, and they decide, nah, they're not.
Hmm. No, it is true. And this sounds grim, and it is horrible that humans are the product of war. We essentially have only furthered ourselves through fighting conflict, whether it's things dating back to, you know, all of the wars that
have happened,
or even things like the space.
Fan Critical does TED talks.
Yeah, or even things like the space race, which obviously then enabled things like smartphones, etc., because the technology, you know, the competition between warring factions of humanity has brought us to where we are today. It's a very depressing way to look at life, but it's true, people. That is a fact. So I understand the route that they're going down. I just don't understand how, if everything was living in peaceful harmony, maybe, and just, you know, cave people were kind of sentient enough for fucking Tiamat, probably, you know, just, you know what I mean? Let them all breed. And burst out. You'd have been there 5,000 years sooner, mate.
Problem
what
is,
the fuck you did?
Nah. Because they didn't have. Well, no, because they would have had lots of babies, but too many of them would have died, and that's what happened.
Maybe
death rate and birth rate. Maybe. They were cancelling each other out for thousands of years, mate. It's only recently, and this is what the film says. They've just got to the right amount of people now.
It's true.
You know, it's at this point that Tiamat can be birthed by Earth. And that's why they call it Earth.
Birth. Yeah, very true. All right, let's get into some of the characters, because I think there's some standout performances here. I really like Gilgamesh, and I think the best relationship in the film is Gilgamesh and Athena's relationship. I think that is far stronger than the main romantic storyline, which is kind of central to the whole plot, which is that of Icarus and Circe. Do you agree, Gareth?
It's quite understated, the old Gilgamesh Athena.
Yeah, it's not romantic. I'm not saying that this is a romantic relationship. I'm just saying the relationship.
Yeah.
I think there is nothing romantic in their relationship.
No.
Okay, I think that Gilgamesh literally is a beautiful depiction of a support person within a film that I don't think we've got in this context before in a superhero film. So he is literally, I mean, Athena is suffering from essentially like a form of eternal Alzheimer's called Mad Weary, which is where she is actually remembering, because their memories are wiped after every cycle so that they don't feel guilt for what they've done, essentially. She is remembering all of these planets and civilizations that she has destroyed. So she goes crazy when she goes into this sort of, you know.
It's a lot to remember.
Berserk.
There are some memories you want to let go of, aren't there? Like,
and Gilgamesh offers to stay with her and try and bring her back to the present if they don't wipe her memory again. So the only thing I'd say
is you're right. Like, from that point, that's lovely. That is a lovely relationship. And one thing that I really like about it is, as you say, it's not a romantic one. Not every relationship that's tender and loving has to be romantic, and movies don't do enough of that. Only thing I'd say is the point when Gilgamesh goes, "I'll stay with Athena," I was like, what's going on here then? Why? Who are these two to each other? There is no build up. There's no build up to that.
Yeah.
They just...
I agree it comes out of nowhere, but I think that's hurt by the fact there's 10 characters, like we've said, and you can't necessarily, you know, have the time to do these things. Now, you said when you saw Jolie in the first scene of the movie,
that's Angelina Jolie, not some guy called Joe Lee.
You said, you literally turned to me in the film and said, I'm going to be really annoyed by her in this film. And I was actually pleasantly surprised by the end of it, how wrong I think you felt, even to yourself, you were, because her role is quite understated and reserved.
It is.
Really.
It is. Let me defend myself slightly, though. First time that you see her, she does, like, a character does some cool thing with a spear or whatever, and her the face that she pulls is just so smug and distracting. And
yeah, it is.
I was like, what are you doing in this? And I mean, I still sort of feel like it's a really strange bit of casting. Yes, she was fine and played the character I guess she did.
Gilgamesh before, Gareth?
Yeah, go on.
He's the big guy in Train to Busan.
Oh, very cool.
Helps.
Yeah, nice.
Amazing, amazing actor. And I thought he was brilliant in this film.
He's got very kind eyes, doesn't he?
Yeah, and this film, you know, spoiler warning, when he dies, it becomes a worse film, in my opinion. Because the characters, it's quite difficult to get a sense of them. I actually really like Cersei. I think she does a good job. I think
she's a bit tepid.
You know, Rob.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's a bit tepid, but I think Rob Stark and Cersei being together, Icarus is played by Richard Madden, who is Rob Stark, and he's with a character called Cersei. I mean, the Game of Thrones thing was inescapable there. I was like, are you serious?
And
Jon Snow was with Cersei. I didn't even think of that. So what's going on here?
I thought there was a moment, right, fairly early in the film, where Jon Snow and Rob Stark come face to face. I thought they were going to throw in a cheeky Game of Thrones reference. I don't know what they were going to say. We better get inside. Winter is coming. I would have loved it. I would have lost my shit.
It's the reunion everyone wants and never got. Like, the moment that, you know, Jon and Rob say bye to each other, in episode like 2 of Game of Thrones.
No,
season
it's
1.
Not that early.
They never. It
That's
is, mate.
Insane,
they never see each other again.
That's fucked. That's not.
So it's the reunion that everyone wanted, but no one ever got. You know, both King of the North. So just saying. Anyway, it's yeah. So that was crazy. I mean, the other Eternals. You know, the I think Kingo, and we're going to talk about Kingo now because it's just some fucking. This is bizarre, but. Kingo at least tries to bring some more soul and character to the Eternals.
Yeah. I mean, he's supposed to be the comic relief. But again, it's just a bit of a weird thing in that he becomes comic relief after, like, from the halfway point. There's no sign of him being the comedy character. Nothing. Like, he's just a regular, like, cool Eternal doing his little fireball thing. And then suddenly it's like he's been reassigned. It's like, okay, you are now, you're not going to be an Eternal. You are going to be the comedy character. And I mean, what he does at the end is absolutely baffling. Should we talk about it now, or do you want to get to it later?
We will talk about it. I just want to talk about how I think this is where they've tried to shoehorn in with Kingo and his valet. I think they've tried to shoehorn in that Marvel humor, and it feels really flat to me. It feels like I've seen this in every Marvel film, where there's like a hero and then their human bumbly sidekick, whether it's Spider-Man, the latest Spider-Man, whether it's, you know,
Spider-Man,
whether it's, you know, any of the Marvel films where they have this sort of dynamic. I think it's been there. I think I've seen it a million times. I'm so bored of it that it's unreal. So when they kept like making jokes about him filming all the time and how many cameras do you have, I was like, I just can't laugh.
But also,
and I will yeah, go on.
The fact that, like, at the end of the day, Kingo's standing there going, look, we need the world to be destroyed and all humans to be killed. And his little assistant, who is a human who will be killed with this decision, is just like following him along. Like, yes, I agree. Like, what's happening here?
He was, but Kingo's kind of on the fence with the whole situation, which is bizarre to me. Anyway,
he's like, I'm not gonna hurt anyone to do it, but I think the world should end.
Yeah. Anyway, so yes, okay. So the Kingo situation is baffling because when it comes down to the final battle, like essentially where the whole moral of the story comes down to Voltron and they have to all join powers to save the Earth, right? Kingo, in a conversation before this battle kicks off, which is an imminent, you know, epic showdown, says, I don't know what I want. Don't know if I agree with it. I'm not going to hurt anyone. See you later. And just exits stage right.
Literally just walks off. This island that's like in the middle of the Pacific or something.
Mental.
And he's gone. Where is he gone? He's got no sort of travel powers. He's catching the bus.
It's baffling. It's literally the most baffling thing I've seen in a Marvel film for a very long time.
I've been thinking about this. Now, I've been thinking about this.
It could be COVID. It could be COVID, Gareth. I've been thinking about it as well. It could be COVID or something. He wasn't able to do the shoots. They had to sort of, I don't know, think of a way around it. But whichever way you look at it, they should have just fucking sorted it out because it is terrible. Yeah.
So
it's terrible.
Just so that we're being perfectly clear, just in case anybody didn't notice this, it is that all of
if you didn't
all
notice.
Of the Eternals are there. They're on an island, there's a volcano erupting because we've got this giant celestial being born. Yeah. And they're all about to have the final showdown. And he says, good luck, everyone. I'll see us all later, yeah? And leaves the building, the ship, walks out. There is nowhere. There is literally nowhere for him to go. Where is he going? Then the whole final sequence happens. He's not in it. And then the post-final sequence happens and he's back again.
Oh my God. The funniest thing is when Cersei... big final battle happens and, you know, Cersei turns Tiamat to basically steal ice or something and kills him, essentially, with the power of the other Eternals. And we'll get on to Icarus in a minute and how he's a dick in this film. And then she's talking to Kingo in like some sort of English village, possibly Camden, I think it was.
London.
And it's Camden, I think, in London, North London. And she turns to him and goes, "Did we do the right thing?" He goes, "You followed your heart. We all did." I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about, mate? You weren't even there, bro. It's absolutely
the only explanation is that for some reason he couldn't be there to film. That's the only possible explanation. It's just nonsense.
It's fucking crazy. It's honestly crazy. I cannot believe they even kept that line in.
No,
just cut that scene. Just cut that fucking scene at the end, because it makes it, you know, there's a moment where you're like, is he coming back throughout the whole final sequence? He just never turns up.
That
is absolutely
that's
mental.
The thing that happens.
I've had a change of heart. I'm here to help.
Exactly.
Now.
When all seems like all is lost and they're about to lose this battle, boom, out comes a fireball from Kingo. Who's that? Oh, it's Kingo. Yeah. And his mate's filming it as well. Brilliant. Yay. Standing up. No, he's just not there. Fucking bizarre.
Let's talk about Icarus, because he is the big deceit in the film. I think it was pretty obvious from the get-go. He is the Superman like character of the group. He is so fucking Superman in Man of Steel, like Zack Snyder's vision of Superman, that I just couldn't unsee it for the whole film.
Yeah,
the film is so self-aware of this, that it actually, and this is baffling, and this is the first time this has ever happened in a Marvel universe, I turned to you when this happened in the film, they referenced DC in the Marvel universe, meaning that DC is fiction within the Marvel universe, right? The little kid, who is Fastos' son, says, "Hey, it's Superman. I saw you shooting laser beams out of your eyes in London, and you were flying. It's Superman, Dad," or whatever. And I'm just like, are you for real? You've just mentioned DC in the Marvel Universe. And then next, another scene, I think it's Gilgamesh says to the valet, who is, Kingo's valet, says, "Oh, so you're like Alfred."
Yeah, that's true.
I was like, what the fuck is going on here? What is going on in this film? They are referencing DC like it is fiction.
Well, maybe the colour palette being more DC was deliberate then.
Yeah, it's absolutely... I would love to know what listeners think about this. It's the most bizarre thing as
Send
well
us in your artwork that represents what you think about this.
Send us in your artwork of what you think Superman looks like in the MCU.
It is weird, isn't it?
But think about this, right? They've got actual superheroes that they can write stories and comics about. They see things like Thor and they're like, let's make another one called Superman and make a comic of it. What the fuck is going on in this universe?
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It is mental. It is absolutely mental.
So look, just with while we're on Icarus, so the whole thing with him is that he wants humanity to be destroyed. He wants the celestial to be born. Not because he hates humanity.
He thinks
that's the natural order. Like that's what should happen. And so he's aware that that's what's happening. Whereas the rest of the Eternals don't really know. They're sort of just finding out now that that's what they've been heading towards. So he tries to defend the original vision of what should happen. Now what's baffling about this is after Ajax dies and she's killed by Icarus, essentially.
Yeah.
After she dies, she gets to choose her successor, And so Cersei becomes the successor. And yet the rest of the Eternals aren't convinced by her leadership prowess. So they're still sort of going, they're like, Icarus, what should we do? And what baffles me is that he's like, it's not up to me. It's, you know, that Cersei's in charge.
He's just trying to hoodwink them,
but,
I think.
But there's no need. They're at the point. They're at the point where he could just say, look, this is the this is what we've been brought here to do. This is what we should do. And they'll go, yeah, all right, fine, let's do it. Oh, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. We've got to do it. And sure, a couple of them will be upset, but he could have just got most of them over the line that way. Instead, he decides that he's got to go this backwards route where he lets Cersei persuade them not to do this thing, and then he has to try and kill them all. It doesn't make any sense, mate. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay. I do agree it's kind of stupid, but I think this brings up an interesting point about what this film is actually about, and it's about faith.
I thought it was about climate change.
Sort of religion and climate change. It's kind of about faith. It's kind of like, you know, you've got different degrees of faith, and it's about how much do you devote yourself to what you believe, or who you believe to be your God or your purpose. Or, you know, Arishem is this, you know, obviously huge deity like figure who commands the Eternals to essentially you know, do his bidding and do these things following orders, right? And it's about how much do you interpret text as or interpret orders as verbatim. You know, Icarus is a zealot. He is a full believer in Arishem and his purpose, but you see Ajak over millions of years has begun to question her religion, question her sort of faith. And it comes to a point where she takes that upon herself and has tried to foster this family to then also question, you know, go out into the world, live your lives, you know, see what you know, you are not just this one thing. You can do many other things. That is that is fascinating, right? So because you've got it on two levels. You've got Arishem dictating his faith to the Eternals, but then you've also got the Eternals watching humans, all right, and seeing them as gods, right, and doing their own thing. And it's fascinating on so many levels because it's this idea that the Eternals are no better than the humans, right, because they're just following orders. So in terms of Marvel and in terms of like what it's trying to say, not only about what it's trying to say about, you know, technology breeds, you know, the advancement of civilization through war, you know, and stuff like that, which is, I think, what it's trying to say. It's also trying to, you know, give us these multifaceted layers of faith, devotion, people being zealots, you know, crisis of conscience, questioning your existence. These are all very interesting themes.
Too much,
I
though,
think.
Isn't it?
The problem is.
Just, you know,
it's a lot.
Give me some Star-Lord just shooting stuff because it's ugly. Yeah. Yeah, that's fun.
With quips.
Yeah.
Give me more of that, please. Yeah. No, but so I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in here. And I think the character of Icarus is fascinating because he does have a moment of that Star Wars, like Kylo Ren moment where he's like done something really bad, like killed, you know, and then sort of goes, oh, what have I done?
And then, you know,
but it's too late. He's gone too far.
Wow. He's gone too close
to the
sun.
We can talk about the way. Yes. That was, and we both looked, you said it to me and I was thinking, nah, they're not going to do that. Like they're not going to actually have Icarus fly into the sun. When he started doing his full Man of Steel, you know, leaving Earth thing, I was like, he's going to stay in the MCU. He's going to go and sort of find himself now. You know what I mean? In the universe, which I thought was quite an interesting concept. But Icarus could return a different person, an Avenger. He even jokes about being the leader of the Avengers. I'm not saying he would be that, but he could, you know, he could do that. But he literally flies into the sun.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I've got to say,
does that kill him?
Well,
I don't know.
Maybe he's blown it up.
Yeah, imagine that. Destroys the sun, wipes out all life in the solar system. Brilliant.
But he says sorry afterwards, so it's fine. It's also funny how, like, after it's been revealed that he's the bad guy, in inverted commas, how like the rest of the Eternals have all been harboring this secret hatred of him. Like Thena's like, I've always wanted to fight you. And
no, I like that because she's a warrior. She's a warrior queen. I like the fact that she wants to test herself against the best. I like
Phastus
that.
Is like, I've always wanted to clip your wings. It's like, okay, why?
Like, that is bizarre.
You were like best mates.
I've always wanted to clip your wings.
This is nonsense. The only one that sort of made sense and had been seeded throughout was Druig. Yeah.
Yeah, and Druig's a fascinating character, and I don't want to leave this podcast without talking about Druig and Makari, because you know, I think the Druig characters, there's lots of problems with it, mind control, fascism, just sort of this idea of taking away free will. Interesting concept again, couldn't be explored in 2.5 hours for sure. But I really liked his relationship with Makari, and fuck me, Makari is underused in this film. She is wicked, and she's in The Walking Dead, and she plays one of the best characters in The Walking Dead. Comes into it quite late, like season 8 or 9, I can't remember, maybe season 8. And I'm so happy for Lauren Ridloff. She's a great actress, and Makari, brilliant member of the Eternals. I was so annoyed that we didn't get to see her properly again until the sort of final act, where she's in the Domo, the ship, and she's just reading and that. I think the film has terrible CGI. I think the film doesn't look great. Do you know that this film cost $200 million?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Right. It's absolutely insane. It's staggering how much it cost.
Most of that went on the volcano, didn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Still erupting.
But I think her powers look really good. And I was literally watching her super speed and the stuff in this film, and I was like, this looks better than Quicksilver. It looks better than some of the X-Men Quicksilver stuff. Like, I was like, this is good. Better than The Flash, for sure. For sure better than The Flash. So I think she was criminally underused in this film. And I can't wait to see more of her. I think she's a great character. And she has a bit more of that character. Even though she speaks in sign language throughout the film. She also does that in The Walking Dead, by the way. So
is she actually deaf, the actor?
I think so, yes. I think so, yes. Hence why she does the sign language. But she is so charismatic, and her relationship with Druig is very interesting. But once again, completely, there's even a line in the film like, is this a thing now, from the Eternals? Yeah, yeah. Saying that to them.
Yeah.
I'm like,
see,
yeah,
but
is this
actually
a thing now?
Actually, okay. See, that one I didn't mind, because it's sort of like, you can see that they're hanging out a bit early on, and it's not, but it's just not made explicit that they're sort of romantically involved or interested. It's just like, oh yeah, these two are hanging out. Like, the difference with that is that with Gilgamesh and Thena, I didn't even see the two of them together until he was like, I shall stay to protect her. So, where's that come from?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Although it's the best relationship in the film.
Yeah.
I love it. I thought it was very touching. Gilgamesh and Thena really, really was the heart of the movie at times for me. I was like, oh, this, I actually really like this. Let's talk about a couple of things, and then we'll move on to the post-credit scenes. Bizarre ending to the film, where it's like this lull, everything's okay. They've stopped the emergence. Icarus has flown into the sun and killed himself for some bizarre reason. Sprite is now human and is, you know, not being a dickhead.
Again, just very convenient. Oh, I think I have some more power left that I can make you human. If you want. Right, why is that?
I literally was like, my head was going, Deus Ex Machina, all the time with this film. But yeah, they're on Primrose Hill, so you've got Jon Snow, who is Dane Whitman.
Well,
or
Kit Harington is Dane Whitman.
Kit Harrington in this film
plays Jon Snow, who is playing... Dane.
He literally is in two scenes.
It's bizarre.
It's they're on Primrose Hill in Camden, chilling out, and then Arisham turns up.
It's quite a cool visual.
Amazing visual. Amazing. I love
stuff being in space, but like visible from Earth. It's
yes,
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
it looks great. I was like, oh my God. It kind of also reminded me of Show Me What You Got.
Yes.
from Rick and Morty.
Oh my God, imagine.
Floating head, the Cromplemites, whatever they're called. Or,
I want I to see what you got.
I was like, Get Swifty is about to play. So Arishem turns up. He takes Cersei, Kingo, who else was it who didn't leave on the Domo? I can't remember. Three of them. And says, you've killed a Celestial to save these people. I will let them live if I scan your memories and see that they're worth saving. I'll come back for judgment. And then he just takes them. And that's the end of the film. And it's so clearly they're thinking bigger scale here. They're thinking Eternals 2. Which I didn't think was going to happen.
Don't worry about that, because Jon Snow's just found a sword handed down.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
We'll
get into that, yeah. So the film's got a bizarre ending. I also just want to say that there is a scene with, and it's funny, so let's talk about it. But there's a scene where before this happens, they're all chilling out in some sort in Ajax house in South Dakota. And Angelina Jolie is putting her hand into a toaster. What the fuck is going on there, guys?
I don't know, mate.
What the fuck is going on?
I'm baffled.
There's a scene where the kid is trying to get an orange and Angelina Jolie just stood there putting her hand into a toaster.
And she says, I get confused.
Is this
like a haunting portrayal of, you know, like mental degradation?
I understand that, but
ridiculous. And it feels like it's played for laughs, but it's not funny.
Yeah, it feels completely inappropriate. Like, I don't know, something about it's bizarre. Anyway, enough of the toaster shit. I want to ask you a question about before we move on to the post-credit scenes, which is guess who did the score of this film? Do you remember this?
No,
do you remember
I'm
going
to say this. I'm just trying to think what it sounded like. I can't remember any of the music. Are you going to blow my mind and tell me it was Hans Zimmer or something? And
no,
just
imagine if it was Hans Zimmer. It's one of the best composers of the moment. It's Raymond Duwadi.
What?
Right.
But hold on. Actually, I'm just thinking. Now that you say that, I'm just thinking about some of the scenes in like Babylon that remind me
really
of the
Dothraki,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it did. But massively
okay,
underused.
Right. I can't remember anything of this score. And I googled it afterwards because Marvel music's usually quite stirring, and at least in the action sequences is quite like mental, and you're like, okay, this is cool. And this was so devoid of any character or emotion or theme. Like, and we love our soundtracks here at Fan Critical, and just personally, I love, and you know, you like the scores, yeah, and stuff. It was fucking Raymond Duwadi. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, he is cashed in. He probably got paid like $2 million for this score, and he did fuck all with it. Like, honestly, I could have done the score for this film from what I heard. It was so not memorable. It's just crazy to think that he did it. Anyway, I thought that had interest.
Played a couple of CDs that he'd ripped from LimeWire. There you go. Use that.
Yeah, there you go. Use that. Thanks.
A few million, please.
Anyway, let's talk about these post-credit scenes, because a couple of things. So post-credit scene number one takes place in the Domo, on the Domo ship, as the as Makari, Thena, and Druig are looking for more Eternals to sort of enlighten and tell them about that their purpose is, you know, a lie. It's not to further sentient life for the goodness of it. It's to feed a giant Celestial and then kill them all.
Yeah.
So they're doing that. And then, I couldn't believe this, Harry Styles appears on the ship. What the fuck is going on here? What is going on here? Harry Styles, of One Direction fame, also very good in Dunkirk, I'll say, turns up and he's playing Thanos' brother, Eros, right? Followed by a little elf
there's
fella.
Not a lot of family resemblance. What is going on? Not, they don't look like they're cut from the same cloth, do they?
Well, this is interesting. So in the comics, he doesn't actually say here that he's Thanos' brother. He says he's defeated Thanos. And what's interesting is in the comics they are brothers because Thanos is an
Eternal. His little elf fella, his little dwarf mate, says the brother of Thanos.
Does he say
it? Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's interesting is in the comics, Thanos is actually an Eternal. He is a sort of genetically flawed Eternal, which is why he's purple and he's so strong. Okay.
That's why he's purple. Oops, got that wrong.
Yeah. No, seriously. But in the film, it's weird because Eternals in the comics are actual biological beings, whereas they're robots, it seems, in this version of Eternals, right?
Yeah. Right. Synthetic. Yeah.
So, right. Okay. Now, Harry Styles, who plays Eros, is actually an Eternal.
Harry Styles?
So he is a robot, as far as we
know. Is actually an Eternal? Or Eros is actually an Eternal?
Eros is actually Eternal. But what's also interesting is, and you'll like this, what do you think Eros's like superhero name is? You'll love it.
Hold on. I think they said it. Isn't his superhero name Star Fox?
Yeah, it's Star Fox, which is obviously crazy.
I was pretty sure that they weren't doing like a Nintendo Marvel crossover here.
Where the fuck's Slippy? He introduces him. Oh, fucking shut up, Slippy, twat.
Good. Star Fox. That is the coolest name. I've got to say, some of the names are pretty cool. I think Kingo. Kingo's a rubbish name. It sounds like a Pokemon.
it does.
But Icarus is obvious. That's a cool name.
Yeah, very cool name. So Harry Styles is in the MCU. He's playing Thanos' brother in inverted commas. I don't know if they're going to track that way necessarily, literal brother or some sort of half brother. I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know how they're going to go with that.
Adopted brother.
It's interesting. He's turned up. His powers, he's obviously an Eternal, so he's got super strength, super longevity, blah, 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 blah. But his main power is like seduction and sort of, he's completely a womanizer in the comics. Like he's a fucking, he just sleeps with loads of women.
Harry Styles?
Maybe that's why they cast him. Fuck knows. But genuinely, his power is like
womanizing.
Euphoria. He like, no, essentially womanizing. He gives people the feeling of euphoria, like love. It's weird. What? Anyway, that's his sort of it's like mind. It's like a form of Druig's mind control, you know? Anyway, that is genuinely his power. Be interested to see how he fits into the MCU. Obviously, he has a way of finding Arishem because he has that sphere. So it's going to be a massive part of Eternals 2 is freeing the others from Arishem's control, which could be interesting. And, you know, having Harry Styles in the MCU, I genuinely did not know that was going to happen. I had heard nothing.
Tell you what,
casting
the 18-year-old girl so sitting behind us in the cinema, we're delighted to see Harry Styles appear.
They bloody were. And I tell you something now, that's a fucking smart move from Marvel. Like, say what you want. They're a money printing machine. Hey, how can we get even more money? Let's put fucking one of the biggest heartthrobs on the planet in our films.
They'll get BTS involved in the next one.
Mate, BTS were involved in this one. They had some music in this film and they even had a mention, which was interesting. And what I will say is, you know, to have Harry Styles, who, say what you want about him, he's not a bad actor. Like in Dunkirk, I thought he was very good. And he's a very talented young man. And a Marvel role could be perfect for him because he's got that sort of charm and charisma already, you know? So, you know, let's see how he does. Obviously, I think the womanizing thing is going to have to be toned down because we don't live in the 50s and the 60s when his character was written in the comics. You know, that was, you know, it's a very controversial character now, looking back at some of the stuff, researching this podcast anyway, looking back at some of the stuff that he did in some of the comics is interesting, you know, very controversial.
Sounds like James Bond, to be honest, and he's still kicking.
In a way, he is still kicking around. sort of. The second post-credit scenes that you alluded to was that of Jon Snow, Dane Whitman, or Kit Harington is the actor, in London, and he alluded to a complicated family history before Cersei was grabbed by Arishem.
Just quickly,
right? Remember that?
Kit Harington has got a very interesting family history. He's like basically royalty. Did you know that? Like,
that's very interesting. Check
it out. He's like a lord through birth. It's mad.
There you go. He's king of the north. So he's there with this sword, you know. It's got an ominous Stark-looking sword. He was trying to tell Cersei about it before she got grabbed. He's hesitant to pick it up because there's a plaque on it which says, "Death is my reward." Okay?
You would hesitate, wouldn't you? You'd take a moment.
He goes, he's like, "Oh, right, well, I've got to do something now because that thing bigger than the sun just appeared, so this sword will save the day." He's about to grab it, and he hears the voice, "Sure you're ready for that, Mr. Whitman." Now, I turned to you in the cinema and was like, I think that's the Watcher, which is, you know, a very famous character from What If, basically this omniscient being that sort of oversees all of the multiverse. But it was actually, similar voice, it was actually Maharaja Ali. Now, Maharaja Ali is Blade. He is the new Blade. He's been cast as Blade for the last few years. The film is almost finished production, I believe. So Blade, get this right, you know, Blade, Wesley Snipes is Blade, you know, yeah. Great film, Blade the first one.
I get
one.
It.
The new Blade, Maharaja Ali, is talking to Dane Whitman here.
Who is Jon Snow.
Are you sure you're ready for
who has a blade in a box.
Yeah. Who has Longclaw. I mean, who has... So it's quite crazy to have Blade talking to Dane here.
Now, on.
Dane's
Sorry.
Character...
So he's playing Blade.
Yeah, go on.
That voice...
Maharaja Ali is playing
but that,
Blade.
That voice
yes.
is Blade.
That is Blade. Blade was talking to Dane there, yes. So it's a massive tease. Everyone's very excited for Blade, Gareth. Blade is like obviously one of the coolest Marvel characters. And I think, you know, everyone loves the original Blade film. So people are excited to see Maharaja Ali as Blade. Okay. Now I turned to you and said, yeah. Look, I think Kit Harington is some sort of superhero in this film. And I can't remember what it was.
Night Boy.
I said, it's Nightman or Nightboy or something. And I was like, I cannot remember who they're trying to cast him as. Yeah, he's actually Black Knight. He's actually Black Knight.
That's close. Yeah, I'd loved it if he'd come back and said something like, "Oh yeah, it's a Hurricane Boy." I got that wrong, but you were close. Yeah. I'll give you
now,
credit.
Yeah, I was close. Now I can't say I know much about Black Knight, so I had to do some research. Now he wields something called the Ebony Blade. Cool name, very cool name for the sword. It's an enhanced sword forged from a meteorite and passed down by Whitman's ancestors. It can slice through nearly any substance, absorb energy, and be summoned telekinetically, like Thor's hammer, Mjolnir. Very cool. Unfortunately for Dane, the sword is also cursed. Using it gradually drives the wielder insane.
Oh, boy.
So that's why it's how that says that on the plaque. It's quite cool, like... It's a cool idea. It feeds the fact that Blade's there feeds into this idea of there's two sort of sides of Marvel at the moment. There's cosmic, which is like what this film definitely sits within, and what Guardians sits within, and even like the Infinity War towards the end of you know, the original Avengers cycle, and things like you know, I can't even think off the top of my head. Thor, Love and Thunder. Thor is also cosmic. Yep. So there's all that. And then there's the occult side of things, which is called like basically Marvel occult, which is like Doctor Strange. You know, Wanda will fit into that as well, Scarlet Witch. And then you also have Blade and now Black Knight.
Yep.
Now, that's interesting.
So just a
you
quick
know,
one.
You've got this occult side of things. Yes.
Do you
yes.
think, like... Does Black Knight fit into the Eternal storyline, or is it? And I know that this would be an unusual step, but I don't think it would necessarily be a stupid one. Is this just a way of setting up another film, like a side movie? You know what I mean? Like that doesn't
yeah,
necessarily.
This is a way of. I think this is a way of either getting Black Knight into the Blade film or for the sort of formation of the sort of Marvel occult group, which does exist in the comics. Sort of, you know, Strange, Doctor Strange, Blade, Black Knight.
Doctor
you know,
Strange
these characters
Blade.
Could all band
Doctor
together.
Doctor Strange, Blade.
Doctor Strange. Yeah. But they could all band together and have their own sort of mini Avengers group, you know what I mean? And because you've already got things like the Guardians and Thor and these characters already sort of creating their own cosmic group, you've got like this sort of occult group growing as well. So it's an interesting sort of thing. So I guess Kit Harington being in the film isn't totally pointless. It just feels a bit weird that that's how they've shoehorned Black Knight into the MCU. They must be running out of superheroes now because this is getting silly.
Honestly, the back catalogue of this. When's it going to be like the Shoeshine Kid and Captain Tree insane. Plant?
Well, I was about to say, I'm surprised we haven't seen Howard the Duck, but we have seen him in one of the Guardians films. And also, he's very funny in Marvel's What If animated series. So definitely check that out. So, you know, it's, even Astro the Dog is getting some screen time in the new Guardians of the Galaxy game, which is out on PlayStation and other platforms. Amazing game, apparently. I haven't played it. So if you like Guardians of the Galaxy and you like gaming, definitely check out Guardians of the Galaxy, the game. It's supposed to be very good. So, yes. Anyway, I think that kind of wraps up our thoughts on Marvel's Eternals. It's been a very long podcast. Better wrap up. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to talk about it. You know, I actually had a lot of fun talking about it, probably more than I did watching the film. As I said, hardcore Marvel fans, yeah, definitely go see it. Like, I think you'll enjoy some things in there. I think you'll also be tired of it. The casual Marvel fans, like I said, save yourself for Spider-Man No Way Home. Save yourself for Thor Love and Thunder because, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home looks amazing. You know, a multiverse of Spider-Man. You know, Dr. Octavius is coming back. Green Goblin's coming back. Fucking Tobey Maguire. Andrew Garfield as alternate Spider-Man. That is cool to me. That is going to be a great film.
That is quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also, you know, our current Spider-Man teaming up with Doctor Strange. It's a multiverse thing. It's going to be fantastic. So save yourself for that one.
Doctor Strange Blade will be there.
Doctor Strange Blade, yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, thanks, Gaz, for talking to me about this one.
That's okay, mate.
Yeah.
It was good to go to the cinema again, wasn't it? Let's get out and support your local cinema when you can.
Definitely get out and support cinema. I don't know if necessarily you need to support Marvel because I think they make a lot of money. I think Disney makes a lot of money. Definitely go see some smaller films. You know, and if you haven't seen Dune yet, which we haven't because it's not out here, go see it and then check out our review. Because support Denis Villeneuve, support him. Dune 2 must happen. / it is happening. Okay.
And support us.
Anyway, pleasure. And support us. Patreon.com/fancritical. Email us fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks very much, Gaz. Thank you, Marvel, for once again sort of entertaining us. And thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you on the next
one. We're
going
to go and stand in formation and wait for some music to kick in.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. Let's stand in fan critical formation and wait for the music. Okay, bye.
When you love something, you protect it. Any of them.